Today, I sit down with Lindsay Lee Hobson to speak about all things leadership. If you are somebody right now brand new to a leadership role, maybe you've just stepped up or you want to step up and you're just not quite sure the steps that you need to take, the skills that you need to develop, then this is the episode for you. We speak so much about mindset, communication, how to motivate teams, how to have challenging conversations. Like, we really go into a lot of depth today about how we can all improve our leadership style. So strap in for today's episode. Make sure you take lots of notes and let me know what your biggest takeaway was from this conversation with Lindsay today. And now over to Lindsay. Lindsay, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. I am delighted to have you on. Can you start by giving a little bit of an introduction into who you are, your background, your career journey? So, Lindsay, over to you.
Oh, thank you, Georgie. I mean, clearly I've had a fabulous upbringing. Haven't we all in so many ways? My journey is so diverse, but what I specialize in is leadership development. So I know we spend a lot of our time trying to work out where we fit in the world. And for a really long time for me, that was in survival and trying to work out where I could make a difference and desperately wanting to, but not really necessarily being sure and comfortable with myself as a leader and myself as an individual, because we all get imposter syndrome, don't we? So leadership development is my special area, my special source where I like to focus. And that turned into a second business called the Learning and Development Collective, which we do professional development for internal L&D professionals. So same audience that I'm working with, just two very different ways, two different focuses, which is really, really lovely. And then I also work with speakers and trainers in Professional Speakers Australia. So I'm the national lead for the Chapter Presidents Council. So those who come in externally, who you may have had training from, they're typically a member of our association. I'm in charge of making sure the professional development we do for them is worth doing.
Fantastic. That's, quite the resume there. So we're going to dig into all of that. But I'd love to know where the interest, I guess, in leadership and mentoring and coaching, where did that stem from? Can you sort of pinpoint a few things that happened in your career or your lifetime that you go, that's where that sort of really began for me?
Yes. So when I was a teenager, I had a lot of anxiety. I was a very stressed out human. We're talking crying every day in the school counselor's office, just trying to get through kind of anxiety levels. And I knew I wanted to help people, but I didn't necessarily know how. So skip forward a couple of years and I discovered life coaching and I qualified. Originally, it was just to support myself, to be able to live the life that I thought everybody else was living, which was not crying every day. And they seemed smiley and happy and interested in what was going on around them. And not just in survival. And when I realized that I could do that for myself, and that is actually possible for all of us, I wanted to help others. And in that first business was more, it was called Make It Happen Life Coaching. I ran a training session because that's what the coaching school said to do. And I fell in love with training. I didn't have any sales and marketing skills, however, so I went back to employment when that became really evident. My bank balance was literally on zero. I went back to employment and I did a bunch of different things, including sales and marketing, till I felt like I had the skill set to go out on my own and, you know, make that business work again. I started off with coaching young adults, so one-to-one sort of coaching and mentoring, and I realized it wasn't quite doing the training that I wanted to do. It was much more one-on-one as opposed to group. And that's when I transitioned into corporate world. So now I do leadership development for them, training, and then the rest of it I've already shared.
How amazing. I just want to pause there and just say, like, how you turned pain into passion and purpose, because we've all go through things in our lives that are challenging. I can relate to the anxiety. I definitely suffered with that in my mid-20s when I hit the corporate world. It's putting a lot of pressure on myself. And you said something really profound there as well, because you said that you were sort of basically comparing yourself, thinking that everybody else had it figured out. Everyone else wasn't going through what you were going through. And I think that's what causes a lot of anxiety, is that we compare ourselves to other people and we think they've got it all figured out. Look how successful they are. And actually then we feel like a failure. We don't feel like we're good enough. So how much of that do you see in your work when you're coaching young teenagers and even leaders coming up? Like, is that a common theme that you see and notice?
it is a common theme right the way up to exec level, which is where I, so emerging leaders through to exec levels where I do my leadership development. And imposter syndrome is a niche form of anxiety, and anxiety is always the fear that in some way, shape or form, what the future is going to throw at us is more than we're able to handle. So it comes up every single day. You can't always call it imposter syndrome depending on the context. However, that's in essence what it is, that fear and that comparison that other people are either better at this than we are, or that we may be a fraud, or doubting that what we have achieved is being earned and thinking someone else might notice that and there might be some sort of consequences. It's prevalent in all stages of the leadership journey. It's a normal part of being a human, in my personal opinion.
I completely agree, and we've all experienced it in some degree, and men definitely aren't immune to it. I know a lot of amazing male friends that have also experienced this, and where I think it shows up the most, I'd love to sort of speak to you about this, is often when we're pushing ourselves to do something different, unknown, outside of our comfort zone. Like people say to me, I didn't really experience imposter syndrome. And I'm like, well, what have you done in the last year that's really sort of scared you or made you, you know, challenge your beliefs? Or, you know, I find when I've come up against imposter syndrome, it's when I've got said yes to a speaking agreement or a panel or yes to a podcast. Then I go, who am I to get on that stage? Oh my God, that look who I'm sat next to. She's amazing. And who am I? Like, that's when I've really noticed it come up. So is that common for people to experience that? Because I feel like it happens a lot with high achievers. That's what I notice. That's what I've noticed.
Absolutely. So there's two times that it can pop up in people's lives, and it can be simultaneously happening. It can be one or the other, or it could just be constantly going between one and the other moment to moment. The first is when we're developing skills. So we've pushed ourselves and we need to upskill to be able to do that. And the other is, for example, when we're transitioning to be a leader for the first time, or we're stepping into new levels of responsibility and there's an identity evolution which can come with that. Maybe we haven't perceived ourselves to be a leader on that level or to be able to achieve or attain X, whatever it is. And our identity has to evolve and transform a little bit. Typically, if you're experiencing any sort of imposter syndrome, it's normally one of those two things. The research supports it's only that. However, always open to there being more opportunities for it, because it seems to be something that is everywhere.
Mm-hmm. You said something interesting then about identity. This is something that I, in my own life, have worked on a lot. I'm sure you've had to as well, with starting your own business and really sort of starting to sort of look at yourself in multiple different ways, like looking at yourself and identifying that you don't have everything figured out, that where are my gaps? That also comes from self-awareness. And also, like, where are my strengths? What am I really good at? And I feel like that's this sort of like really forms your identity. But what I've also found over the years, working with a lot of women in sort of the recruitment angle, who are sort of putting their hands up, wanting new careers, wanting like promotions, their identity doesn't match the person or the leader that they want to be. So how have you gone in your own life creating this new identity as like a business owner, as a successful speaker, as a coach, as a mentor? Like, yeah, you've got quite the resume, but you also started as a really anxious, sounds like quite maybe a shy girl. So how have you gone about creating and crafting your own identity into the woman you are today?
It's a very good question, and there's no one straight answer to it. It was determination to be that happy person that I thought everybody else was all the time, because I was taking people of that face value level and thinking, if they can have it, then surely I can have it too, and not letting that go. So it transformed from someone who was just trying to survive day to day, literally, to someone who was able to put some foundations in place in their life and, you know, purchase property, hold down a relationship, you know, all those types of things that we consider to be in so many ways just normal parts of being part of this society. I'm realizing, yes, I can do that. So what's that next level that I can do? I want to start a business, you know, so how can I do that? And they do say starting a business is the best crash course in personal development that you can ever do. And I can absolutely wholeheartedly agree with that, because the little mistruths that you tell yourself on a regular basis, you know, you could call them lies, but you're not meaning it, that you're telling yourself that's true about the reality or about yourself, you know. Those assumptions that you don't have the opportunity to challenge on a day-to-day basis about self and your environment and the world, you really get the opportunity to face those head on and say, well, if I really want this, which is build a business or be in leadership development or feel comfortable running this group or on this speaking, on this stage, like you mentioned before, Georgie, then I must find a way to solve this problem in front of me. I must find a way to see it from a different perspective. And I suppose it helped that I, in high school, was always someone really interested in philosophy. At the time before I had real soothing skills with my anxiety, I found it really soothing and really calming to be able to look at things from so many different perspectives and not feel like there was a black or a white all of the time. And it's probably those skills that I learned during those years that has helped me today, plus that determination. And from there, working out what it really feels like to not be someone living in survival mode. And I think this is something that's not holistic. You don't sort of arrive at it. There's still times when we all in different pieces drop back to survival. And sometimes it feels like relating to a song on the radio that when you think about it is a really below the line song. You know, it's a you know, rise up and we're all there and we all need to, you know, hustle to get what we want, or, you know, he's left you for somebody else if you're into that sort of music. Or sometimes even just relating to that sort of music can be an indication that there's a part of our lives that we're not thriving in. And it can be really little, that's just one example, really little things like that, which can show us that there's room for improvement based off how we do or do not relate to things as well. And I think there's some real gold in being that honest and self-aware. And I think that's something we don't develop enough in any level of leadership or just as human beings in general. Self-awareness and emotional intelligence is not something they teach in school, but I wish that they really did.
Yeah, I agree. And I can completely relate to the crash course in personal development, starting a business. And, you know, like I actually look back at the time, like the naivety was just off the charts. But like I'd gone from like being a successful recruitment consultant. I thought, oh, I've got this. Wow. what a humbling experience it was. I knew nothing about how to start a business, how to run a business, how to hire people, accounts, finance, none of it. You know, taking on contractor, it was just such a learning journey. But the biggest thing that I had to constantly work on every single day was myself. Because if I couldn't manage me and my state and how I showed up, it was never, ever going to work. And the first, I guess, hurdle that I came across, I could have been like, I'm not good enough. I'm not good at business. And I also had a story as well, Lindsay, which is, I think, really important about identity, of that because I was really rubbish at maths in school, that I couldn't get involved in finance and numbers. And that's a really, really important part of a business, making sure you've got cash flow, profit margins, all of these things, right? Otherwise, how can you forecast? How can you predict what's coming? And I had that story and that belief and that identity. So it was just like a rewiring of all of this programming that I'd had as a young child. You're crap at maths, Georgie, you're in the dunce class there, right? And that's how you were made to feel as a child. Whereas actually, I've changed the story. I'd love to get your thoughts on this as well. The story now is that I am fantastic at business and I'm fantastic with money and finance and budgeting. And okay, I'm not an accountant, but I understand the fundamentals and that's all I need to understand. I don't need to know algebra or a pie chart or any of that rubbish in maths, but I understand enough to grow and scale a successful business. And I've had to really go on that journey, but that was huge for me to just sort of overcome that. So I so agree with you that it's the biggest journey of personal development and growth that you will ever go on. It was fascinating what came up.
Absolutely. And I love that you mentioned that you had a persona or the belief that you were not good at maths and therefore this meant that. And mm-hmm. We all have these unwritten rules about ourselves. And I'm always so hesitant with anything that starts with I am, because you're setting yourself an expectation, and whether you're aware of that or not, for better or worse, there's a bunch of rules in your mind about what that means. And that will define your behavior in so many different ways. And so whilst I am statements can be really powerful for, you know, uplifting and all those types of things and identity pieces too, you just have to be so careful on what they can mean on the flip side. Because if you, for example, have a belief that you are incredible at sports and then you compete in an activity where you don't win anyway, but I'm incredible and therefore I must win, it can really shake everything. Whereas if you define that differently, it can just be a whole different experience in the world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, you must see this all the time, people coming to you. Like, I'm always interested in pattern recognition, right? I feel like Why do some people go on to live really happy, successful lives? Well, maybe on paper, what they show on Instagram could be different behind the doors, but let's just say that they do. And why are others struggling? Like, what's some common themes that you've seen from your coaching that you go, that seems to come up often, or this belief, or this sort of way of thinking? Anything that stands out for you that is something for us all to be aware of in our own lives and our own thoughts?
It is human condition in so many ways, at least of this society, to give our power away without even knowing it. So we're constantly wanting to change and adapt our environment. And I believe it goes back to an old survival skill, but I wouldn't dare to try and remember what that exactly is off the top of my head. However, we do tend to place the emphasis and the responsibility for things in the external. So if we are experiencing stress, we will instantly try and change something around us or use something external to soothe our internal. And by giving our power away on that regular basis, even just little bits, you know, little bits. So I need my morning coffee to feel like I'm ready to start work. That's a perfect example there. What if you didn't? What if it had nothing to do with your morning coffee and you could just choose that internally? Working on the assumption that we have all the power we need and all the responsibility, therefore, that we need to be control of our actions, control of our results. And whilst we can never control other people and everything that happens out there, knowing that we can control what we do about it and how we feel about it at any point in time, no matter the circumstances, is the most liberating thing. And in all the coaching and mentoring I've ever done, including in leadership development, we weave it in there in the leadership development. You don't always have to say it verbatim, but it comes up time and time again as something that is holding people back from transitioning from leading self to leading others, or leading others to leading org, or even just stepping into that management role, or even just feeling comfortable to try that new skill they've just developed. So it's a really big one that we don't spend enough time being aware of, in my personal opinion.
That was definitely my sort of habit, I guess. When things in my life got a bit overwhelming, a bit stressful, I'd reach for something in the external world and zone in on it a lot, like the control. That was it for me. If things were outside of my control in my work setting, I would then try and control people, things, everything around me. I'd obsessively clean, for example, right? Like my house had to be pristine. If things weren't going well in business or work, something else was sort of, you know, I had to sort of focus on something else and do it because that's what I could control. And I've noticed that's a pattern within me, again, sort of applying self-awareness. So I notice now, okay, Georgie, you're starting to do this habit again. That must mean that something's not quite right. You need to maybe go and look at that. Are you trying to control things a bit too much? Are you not practicing surrender? Are you sort of like a bit anxious and stressed at the moment? Just these little things that I'm really aware of that I do in my personality. When things go outside of my control, I try and control the external things.
Yes.
And is that common? Do you find that?
Yeah, absolutely. I do that myself all of the time. And it doesn't matter what new levels of self-awareness you reach and what new levels of AI that you soar to. There is always something that we will naturally, as a set human condition, gravitate towards or try to do externally. And you can get support. NLP, pracs are really good at helping with that as well. But it is absolutely natural. The other thing you can do is just, as you just highlighted, just being aware of it and have it as a flag every time you notice yourself doing it. And you can share with your hubby, your wife, your significant other, your friends, your mom, your dad, your siblings. If I start doing X, can you please let me know so that I can start to make some more conscious decisions that are in alignment with supporting me long-term instead of short-term.
I'm only thinking of a scenario that happened the other week. Like, I came off a call, it wasn't the best call, and I just got the mop out and started furiously mopping the floors.
Good on you. I was like,
I'm taking this mop and I'm mopping these floors. I was like, oh, there I go, survival. But I actually had a chuckle to myself because I'm just like, okay, if that's just me, like, you know, it's not something that I maybe, it's just something I'm just working on, something I'm aware of, like you say, awareness. And then I sort of laugh and chuckle to myself and I put the mop down and just went for a walk around the block instead and just took few deep breaths. But just on this, before we move on to sort of like leadership, and I want to definitely go into public speaking because this is something that, and communication is something that a lot of people would love to get better at. Anything else? Because I know that there's a lot of anxious achievers out there. Anything that can really help or really helped you when the mind gets busy, when we start to feel stress, that we can do just to calm ourselves down in the moment so we don't get to the point where we're totally stressed out, burnt out and exhausted?
Yes. And this is much easier said than done. And I acknowledge that. So if you feel like this is a big stretch for you, or you feel like it's something that isn't attainable, small, you know, you eat an elephant one bite at a time, small steps at a time. There is a power in understanding that you are not your emotions. You just have emotions, and they may be very large or very small, or, you know, very up and down from moment to moment. And no matter what they are, that is absolutely okay. It's part of the beauty of being the human, of being a human, and understanding that not every emotion requires a why, and you'd understand that. So if you are feeling particularly anxious in a moment, or very stressed, or perhaps uncertain, taking a step back from that emotion and find a way to physically do that. For me, that was like holding it here and being like, okay, well, you're just a little concern. You're just a little thought. You're just a little, what is it in here that's creating this thought? Because there'll be a trigger or a pathway of thoughts which has resulted in this emotion. So for you to be able to track that back, and this is literally how I got over my anxiety. I found a way to be able to analyze everything going on in my mind step by step, not all at the same time, separately from the emotions I was feeling, so I could work out what was triggering that pathway to get to here and then pick something different. Much easier said than done. It normally requires third party of some sort to help you with that, and typically a professional third party. For me, it was a mixture of, I think I had a counselor and I also had a coach at the time. So I had two coaches at the time. And I also had a counselor too to help me work through that. And it's a very powerful thing you can do. So start by practicing that when you don't need it. Start with happy thoughts. Start with things that make you feel good, because it's a skill that when the rubber hits the road, you'll be glad you developed it elsewhere and not in that moment, because you won't have to sort through the unenjoyable experience of the negative feeling, whatever it is that you don't want. So going through that process, starting now, understanding it's a journey and it will continue to be a journey. It's never a destination. Allowing yourself to separate a little bit from your emotions just in the moment so that you can understand it's not all of you. It doesn't need a why necessarily. It just is what it is. And then understand and unpack the thought process that happened, the pathway that happened there. Very powerful tool, but understand it's a lot easier said than done. So start now.
I really love that. That's such great advice. And I love what you said about doing it when you're in a really happy state as well. So just to talk through that, just so I'm super clear. So let's just say I'm experiencing a moment where I'm just super happy. I feel joy. I'm like, I'm in a moment, maybe I'm sort of walking on the beach and I'm just having one of these moments to be like, I love my life. Like, this is amazing. In that moment, what would I be then doing? So like, oh, feeling joy right now. Would I be aware of my thoughts? Would I sort of be more aware of what was happening around me? Talk me through what I can do, because I love this and I will definitely do this.
Start by using your chunking questions. So whether you need to chunk up or down, it's slightly different for everybody. And start by asking yourself something along the lines of, for me, it was always, what am I thinking right now, which is resulting in this? So I have a extraordinarily large, I'd say passion, but my fiance would say obsession with cats. I just love them. So whenever I see a cat, it's like a massive dopamine rush, get very excited. We usually have to spend about half an hour in that area before we can move on, which he loves. So if, for example, I was seeing a cat and I was feeling that rush of, oh my God, this is the best thing ever, that obsessive feeling almost, I would start by saying, what am I thinking right now to result in X? If that doesn't work for you, try, what does this mean to me? And continue to chunk up or chunk down from there, depending on what sort of answer you get. What does that mean for me? What am I thinking to create X? And just those sorts of questions continue down until you get to something which seems really left from center. it's typically more than three layers down, because we've got three layers of story typically, and I'm super generalizing here, but typically more than three layers down, normally more than that. But if you hit like the fourth reason, you know you're starting to get in the ballpark. So what does that mean to me? How does this impact me? What does this, what result does this have for me? Those sorts of questions. So if you're walking on the beach and you're feeling that level of joy for your life, you're like, okay, well, what does this mean for me? What does this mean to me? And you continue to just ask that question until you get to something which really resonates with you. And sometimes, for full disclosure, sometimes what you think is the answer isn't always the answer. It's the practice of, and you'll start to learn yourself about what's real and what's not when you start to apply that in other areas.
So powerful, because, and when you were saying that, I was thinking, when I'm on that beach, I had a goal when I first arrived in Australia 12 years ago that I wanted to own a home that was walking distance from the beach. That was my goal. And it just sort of like, when I'm on the beach, sometimes I never want to just ignore what I've already achieved. And
yes,
because there's always more. I'm definitely very aware that I'm the sort of person that is focusing a lot on what I don't have versus what I do have. And it's a very, very conscious awareness for me to make sure that I'm always in a place, not always, but I spend more time in gratitude than lack, because I'm very goal orientated. I'll set goals. And so when I'm on the beach, I really do try and tap into that gratitude for myself, for the opportunities, for the people that have helped me get to this point in my life. And that's, I never want to just sort of passively walk on the beach and just be like, oh, you know, here we are again on the beach. It's like, no, I know how hard I worked to get here. And I want to also hold space and acknowledge that I can do it. And if I want something, I can achieve it as well. There's that little sort of trust in me. So, but I think it's beautiful, because now when I'm on the beach, I've got something maybe tangible to really think about as well. Because I think one thing that we do as human beings, and what I do as well, is we use all these tools when we're in a time of crisis, but actually it's using it when we're feeling joy and feeling love and feeling abundant that we could actually lean in and be like, why am I feeling so abundant? Why am I feeling so much joy? Why am I feeling so much love in this moment? And I guess if you can get good at doing it when things are going well, then when things are not going well, you've got also the tools there to cope with that as well. So I just love that, Lindsay. I think that's so, so good. So I just want to just acknowledge you for that. So let's move on now, because I think like leadership, huge thing that I get asked all the time. I run a mentorship program as well for women in tech. So helping women go from sort of, you know, where they're sort of just in sort of high level roles that take the next step in their careers. So what does it take to be a good leader? What are some traits, characteristics that you believe really help shape the leaders, the best leaders of today?
Yeah, it's almost a question like, how long is a piece of string?
So exactly.
What I'm seeing more and more in companies is them selecting some form of leadership, like, for example, transformational leadership is coming up more and more, and selecting the parts that work for them within whatever it is they're trying to achieve. We're definitely moving to a world where we are intrinsically motivating our leaders, but also our team members. And we've been moving there for a while, but I feel like what we learned during COVID has really powered us forward in that. And we're starting to understand that the happy long-term team members are the ones who feel like they belong. And tools such as transformational leadership and what comes with that, or parts of what come with that, depending on the company, can really support that intrinsic motivation and that sense of belonging. So a good leader for me personally is someone who always uplifts their team members and supports them to achieve their own goals. It doesn't matter necessarily what the overall goals of the team are, if the individuals within that are achieving them and you've ensured that the team members within your team are in alignment with that, you will find that the team goals, the team objectives, the team metrics that have to be hit every month, every quarter, every year will get hit, and everybody will want to be on that journey with you. But if you support the individual with that intrinsic motivation as a leader to do that, everybody wins. And that's probably the best way I can explain it. Hopefully that made any sort of sense.
No, it really does. And I've worked for some great leaders And I've also worked for some terrible leaders. And they do exactly what you just said. They make it more about we versus them. They're very inspiring. They very much lead with purpose and values. There's a clear like vision of where we're going and we all feel aligned and excited about that. And that to me is like such an important part of leadership. Like, you know, those strong emotional intelligence skills, really, it's the people element, isn't it? And I think that sometimes what happens in some businesses that I've worked with in the past is that someone will be just really good at their job. They have all the hard skills. You know, they might be really good at, say, in tech, software engineering, right? And they'll be like, right, the next promotion for you is a managing engineer. They've never managed people. They're actually a sole contributor. They love being on the tools, and all of a sudden they're tasked with motivating these 10 people. And I feel sorry for those types of people because I feel like they're just set up to fail almost. They've got no support, but it happens all the time. You know, people are good at their jobs. Hey, we're going to now move you to manage these people. What in terms of like the individual now, because I've been there. I was really good at sales. So they just thought I would be really good at managing a sales team. And I wasn't. I was terrible. I just wanted to be on the phones, deal with clients. I love the sales element. I wasn't a very good leader in that respect, you know, leading through other ways of like, you know, through doing what I was doing, but actually day-to-day managing people was just not something I really wanted, but I kind of was like forced into it. Where does like companies go wrong? And as the individual thrown into that situation, any advice for them if someone's in that position right now?
Yes, it is a very unfortunate scenario when someone's very good at what they do, but not necessarily wanting to either develop those skills or move in that direction. And it is becoming more and more common. So if that is you right now, you are 100% not alone. It is actually quite common as we start to enter a new era where people don't need to be employed to make money. And companies are starting to realize that. As a result, people within companies who are employed are starting to make more informed decisions about what their contribution looks like, because it's their life and it's their time and it's their energy. And if they want to commit it to this company, and this is the newer generations more so, if they want to commit that to this company, then they want to feel like they're being invested in belonging and, you know, making an impact on a day-to-day basis as well. And so when a company then comes and says, hey, we want to promote you to this position, you know, you start in 3 weeks. Before you accept it, if you can, before you accept it, take that moment to say, thank you very much for the offer. I would really like to take a week, a few days, just to do some introspective reflection on whether this is in the best interest of both you and me. Because if this is something I take on, I want to make sure that it's in alignment with me staying with the company long term. And if it's something that I don't feel is in alignment with my goals, I'd be really happy to stay in my role. So let me just take that moment to that however many days a week to reflect on that and come back to you if that's okay. They will always say yes. They always do. Or they'll want to talk about it with you right then and there, depending on the leader. And that's up to you if you want to or not. It's not a conversation you have to have with them if you don't want to. Then do take the time to have a think about the impact you want to make. Because if you're good at what you do and you love what you do, do you need to lead people as part of that to make that impact? Or is that something you want to do almost instead of, because it is almost an instead of? Yes, you still need to hit targets, goals, all those sorts of things, but it's its own unique skill set. It's not something you've done to date. Are you willing to develop those skills? If you find yourself in the scenario where it's too late because you've accepted it and you're hearing like, oh, I didn't really want this, talk to your L&D team. If there is one in the business, there'll always be someone who's in charge of onboarding or training, or there'll be someone, and sometimes you've got to hunt them down. But if you have an L&D team or an HR team, I highly recommend you speak with them, because that is 100% what they're there for, to support you to be the best you can be in your role. And they get a little kick out of when someone comes to them, and because they're trying to create a culture of learning. And by you coming to them, you're demonstrating that you have that culture of learning, and they will just be so happy about it. So you're never bothering anyone at the PNC team, especially if they're in charge of training. They'll be so grateful that you've come to them. But hey, I found myself in this people leading role. It's not necessarily my skill set, or I'm feeling a bit uncomfortable with it, or whatever's true for you there.
what could you recommend that might be able to help me? And they'll work with you, because that is literally their job and they're very good at it. They'll work with you to overcome whatever it is, and they'll have recommendations for you, and you'll almost collaborate on it, which will be a really beautiful feeling for you as well. That would be my top recommendations if you're already in the role and you're sort of not sure what to do with it next, because it's not what it cracked out to be.
That's such solid advice. And yeah, for those that are listening, definitely take that advice, because I think the worst thing you could do is not ask for help, suffer in silence, and then you end up being managed out of the business because you're not performing and your team are complaining. It's like, you know, that's the disaster situation that yes. you just don't want to find yourself in. So it's acknowledging, you know, if you are ready to take that next step and you're sort of enjoying it, but you feel fine, you've got some gaps and some areas of weaknesses, honor them, go and work on them, and you know, you will be that leader that you really want to be. What I'm really interested in as well, and I think about this a lot, is that we're really in a really interesting time in history at the moment, because we've got a lot of new workers coming into the workplace. You know, we've got your millennials that are in the workplace, your Gen Zs, and then you've got your boomers, and you know, you've got lots of different generations all working together. And there's a lot of people sort of in, like, who are younger stepping into leadership roles and managing people. And this is actually a conversation I had the other day, managing people that are older than them and maybe more experienced than them, but they found themselves being promoted into this leadership role. And I find that this is something that really comes up a lot, and maybe where imposter syndrome comes in for a lot of people. Do you see this? Do you see, like, there's a lot of, like, leaders leading people that are older than them? Do you see a conflict happening there? Like, any sort of opinion on this, as we sort of really, these workplaces are becoming extremely diverse, which is fantastic, but how are we navigating the complexity of that?
Yes, it happens very often. For whatever reason, someone who is younger within the business, or literally younger in years, has been given this position of leadership for whatever reason. And someone who might feel like perhaps they should have had the role, or I've been here for ages, what can this young whippersnapper teach me? Which I've experienced a lot back when I was employed, because I always found myself leading in one way, shape or form. And often it was fairly quickly. And there was always someone who was like, why her? Like, she's been here 10 seconds. And it is a fair question for them to ask. And you don't have to have the answer to that. But what I would highly recommend is acknowledging this as a situation or a scenario where you can actually get closer with that. Skepticism or anything close to that is an opportunity for you as a leader to learn another perspective, learn perhaps a gap you didn't know that you had, and upskill, or learn a better way to communicate with that person. So begin a strategic but open and honest conversation with that person, even perhaps before you perceive any potential issues. Perhaps you just think there might be some. Or if you're starting to see them, it's never too late to start and sit down with them and be like, I've noticed X, or I'm feeling a little bit like Y. I really would love to talk with you about it, because obviously we're on the same team, we're working towards the same goals, or you've expressed X opinion, I'd love to better understand that more. My ultimate outcome from this conversation is for us to get to a place where we might not see eye to eye, but we find a way to collaborate on common ground and move forward. Would you be open to that? If they say no, then there's a couple of different pathways for you. You may actually need to escalate this, because if they're not willing to get on board the team train, you perhaps have a bigger scenario at hand or a bigger situation at hand to get some support, advice, particularly if it's your first time leading, from your L&D, from your HR types, your P&C types. They will always say yes, though. So I'm just giving you that just in case. They will always say yes if you approach them in the correct way, a way with rapport, because they want to have the best experience at work too. And if you've really met them where they're at, of course, it's like offering someone their favorite piece of candy. They might not be able to take it at that point in time. Like, oh, I love chocolate. Normally I would say yes, so let's talk, kind of thing. So approaching it that way and seeing it as the opportunity it is the biggest way, or the biggest win for yourself. And having that strategically open conversation, focusing on common ground and collaboration, you will move forward, even if it's not right then and there. You will ultimately, and you'll find that person, even though they may always have strong opinions, they will be someone that becomes your right-hand man in almost every scenario, because you'll learnt to work together on it, to collaborate on it. And if you remember nothing else, just collaboration is the key if you have people more experienced or older than you in your team.
Yeah, that's such good advice, because I think sometimes we try and shy away from these difficult conversations. And it's actually something I wanted to talk to you about as well. And I think part of leadership is navigating these conversations. And that's where the emotional intelligence piece comes in. That's where you've got to be really self-aware. I feel like you've got to have emotional regulation as well. You've got to understand, this is kind of triggering me, like, but I'm not going to react. Like, I'm just going to listen. I'm going to be curious. Like, I'm going to ask questions. I'm really going to try and understand where this person's coming from and not put my thoughts and my opinions and my triggers onto them. It's really hard. It's so hard to do. And it's definitely a skill that is, you know, whether we're new to leadership or we've been leading teams for, you know, over a decade, this is really tough. And, you know, something that I've over the years really struggled with, if I really get to know somebody, for example, I really like them as a person, but maybe they're underperforming, that's the most difficult conversations to have. And you want the best for this person. And it's almost like frustrating that you're like, why aren't you delivering this? What's going on? And I've always tried to approach it with a curiosity of like, what's going on? Is there something else happening? So in those scenarios where perhaps you've got a team, maybe people aren't hitting their sort of targets, they're not living up to the expectations of where they need to be. As a leader, how do we handle those conversations as well? Because this is something that comes up a lot as well.
100%. And firstly, understanding that it's really normal to think that we have to have all the answers for something as a leader. It's part of the counterbalance that our brains teach us in relation to imposter syndrome or skills development often, is that we have to be able to do something to be a leader or to be whatever it is in question, or we have to be the person with the most knowledge in the room. You absolutely don't. So if you're finding your team members or a team member is underperforming, the best thing you can do is zoom completely out of that situation. So sometimes we get so focused on the details that we lose the forest through the trees. Sometimes it's not underperforming. Perhaps this person actually has something really stressful going on in their own life, or perhaps they have a genuine gap in knowledge or skills, or it's a behavior that they didn't know they were exhibiting, which was creating this missing deadlines or creating whatever underperforming metric that we're using. So zooming out and examining it as a whole. So how long have you known this person? And is this something that's consistently been going on? Have you noticed this change recently? And using whatever you can see, even if it's, I have no idea, I've just started yesterday and this person and the results handed to me from the past manager was saying that this person's consistently underperforming and I'm on a deadline, I have to actually deal with this today. Again, just beginning that strategically open conversation, honest conversation. It could be, for example, if this is true, of course, I've had been looking back on the results from the last 3 months and I've just noticed a couple of deadlines that have been missed. So I wanted to work with you to see how we can together ensure that whatever's creating that is put to one side for you, so that you're not having whatever experience it is that is causing X, you to miss deadlines. Or is there something going on in the team which is creating a lag for you that I can perhaps address as your leader? Like, what do you need from me to meet these deadlines? In some scenarios, if you don't have that rapport yet with someone, they may choose to test the boundaries a little bit with you, which is completely normal, and just understand that means that you have some relationship work to be done there. Not everybody trusts everybody instantly overnight like I do. I just have blind trust for everybody all the time, and then I'm always really surprised when it's not mutual. But it's actually really fair for someone to not instantly have that trust, rapport, respect, insert whatever abject it is for them personally, instantly with you. So if that's the case and they do test your boundaries a little bit in that moment, just continue to bring it back to the, we're all on the same team. We're all looking at, you know, achieving X together. And as someone who's new to leading this team, I'd love to better understand your experience on a day-to-day basis so that we can find that common ground and move forward. And if they continue to push, just keep bringing it back to that point. Even if you have to say the same sentence 10 times in a conversation, that's okay. Continue to do so until you can start to move forward. And once you're moving forward into a direction where it's seeming to be uncovered, what you're looking to do is what you can do that's not their job, that
can support them to achieve that. Like, for example, it could be another team member that's from another team completely that's causing some lag. Even if you're not sure if it's going to make a difference, you could be like, well, I have no idea if this will help or not. But what I could do is chat to that person's leader and see if we can work something out between us, because there might be something going on in their team too. Would you be comfortable with that being first steps for us? If they say no, you'd keep going. If they say yes, amazing. Well, I'll chat to that person's leader by the end of the week, and maybe we can catch up on Monday and we can talk about what might happen as a result from that. As I said, it may not fix the problem, but at least it's the start. Do you agree? And if they agree with you, amazing. That'd be the way that I would overcome that. Always collaboration. It's my answer for pretty much everything.
So good. I love the way you're like, what can we do? How can we, yes, we figure this out together? It's like, you're on the same team, you're working together, you've got their best interests at heart. You know, this isn't like a witch hunt. This isn't me sort of putting you down. It's like, what's going on? Like, what can we do? How can we fix this? Like, I think that's just such a beautiful approach. And, you know, unfortunately, I haven't ever had a leader that's done that for me personally. It's very much been about, what could you do better? Why is this not happening? Very much like accusing and just focusing on all the things that maybe I'm not delivering on versus all the things that I am delivering on. It's like, it's very obvious when you've got a great leader versus a not so good leader. And I just love that approach. It was just, yeah, game changing. And having a good leader can really shape your career and really, especially, you know, if you're younger and you're new to the workforce, you know, it is all about the leadership, and it's the leaders can have such a massive impact, mm-hmm, on your career, on your confidence, on your ability. You know, like, people can leave organizations feeling really beaten up. So if there's someone listening to this right now that is listening to you, Lindsay, and being like, wow, like, I am not working for a good leader right now, like, how should they approach this? Let's flip the script here a bit, you know, because it actually might be a leadership problem. And in some scenarios, it can be. If you're an employee and you're working underneath somebody that is maybe going with punishment over praise, how would you handle that situation as an employee if someone's finding themselves in that organization right now?
Yeah, always fall back on what you are responsible for and what you can control within yourself. So, for example, if they are choosing punish over praise, perhaps there's a particular thing that they're saying to you on a day-to-day basis, or a particular activity which is feeling like punishment. You would, in whichever way is culturally appropriate for your company, because they're all slightly different, start that conversation with them. Never over email, I should point out. You might ask if you can chat about it over email, because that's the culturally appropriate thing to do. You'd never talk about it over email, because there's always this thing in the back of people's heads that this is formal and on record. You want the opportunity to have a conversation either on Teams or Zoom or in person or on the phone, to be like, I've noticed that this is something, X is something that you say a lot, and I would love to better understand that, because I feel like I'm taking this in a way that's different to how you intend it. And I'd love to be on the same page with you, so I know what that means moving forward. And that's after you've obviously got permission to talk with them about it. And that's why you wouldn't do it over email, because you could see how you might start the conversation. Can we chat? Make that meeting. Make that time. That's how you'd introduce it. And if they are someone who is task orientated and time poor, which is most managers, not a lot of leaders, most managers, there is a distinction there. Be aware that they may not be in the brain space, particularly if they haven't been to any of my leadership trainings, just saying. They may not be in the brain space to have that conversation right then and there, even though you've prefaced it at the start in that request for meeting type of thing. And if they come back with something, I don't have time for this, or I mean nothing by it, or something that just blows it off, bring it back to the point. So I really want to do my best in this team. And to do that, I think I need to understand what this means moving forward, like what you're meaning by this, because it's having X reaction for me. Like, it makes me feel like this, or every time you say that, I start to think that I've done something wrong. And I'm thinking that you have 99,000 billion things in your life that do not involve me. So if I could understand what you mean by it, then I won't have that reaction and I can achieve X. If they're still really pushing back on it, you would say, would you prefer to talk about this at another time? Or because you don't have to finish every conversation to start. Would you prefer to talk about this at another time? Is there another way that you would prefer or be more comfortable to have this conversation? I'm just looking to understand. At some way, shape or form, they may be ready. If they are never ready and you've approached it three times, head to your L&D, head to your HR, head to your PNC. and say, I've approached it these ways with this person. I've done it 3 times. What do you suggest I do next? What's company policy that I do next? Because I am having, you would find your company way of saying psychological safety. You know, I'm having a reaction in that realm and I just want to show up and do my best. It's not a complaint. It's a looking to understand and not having the skills to do it on my own because I've hit a brick wall 3 times. They will support you moving forward.
Amazing. And if they don't, then maybe it's time to look elsewhere.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, like sometimes we, which is so sad because they do say, don't they? It's like people don't leave organizations, they leave bad bosses, right? So a lot of the time it is down to the leadership, and I can think of one company at the moment that's very much going through that, and they're just losing so many good people because the leadership is just, yeah, not in a good place right now. And but then again, it's like you kind of go, well, then they've got all this pressure from stakeholders. It's very complicated. In bigger businesses, you know, there's never black and white. There's so much gray. And sometimes we do need to kind of, I think, hold space to people. But at the end of the day, if you are in a leadership position, you've got people that you've got responsibility towards, you really have to work on yourself every day, what state you show up, and otherwise don't be in a leadership role, right?
Yes.
And that's the key thing. And I think a lot of leaders as well, the good leaders also have like a lot of like delegation, they have assistants and they have people like, so I think we could help leaders out as well by taking a lot of their, you know, calendar and admin and all that kind of stuff they also have to do amongst managing a team and sort of delegate that elsewhere. I feel like we need to sort of also support these leaders as well.
So true. Luckily, it's so easy for us to think just because someone's leading, therefore they must have all the skills together, the same way we would expect of ourselves, but they're just people too. And perhaps they found themselves in this position and they actually didn't want to, and now they don't know how to get out of it. They're not even necessarily consciously aware of that. So having that level of empathy that your leader may be going through something, like they don't like the role and they're stuck because they can't leave because they got a mortgage. Mm-hmm. And so coming with that level of empathy, if there is nothing else, you don't want to leave your job because you like it, but just continuing to hit brick walls and you're developing as much as you can to be able to overcome that so that you can make roadways with them. Because because you hit brick wall 3 times doesn't mean you have to stop there. You can absolutely keep trying in different ways outside of what I've suggested. And that's something that is all of our responsibility. You don't have to. You could just choose to show up with empathy, but that is also an option.
Yeah, very, very, very true. Final thing I want to touch upon with you, Lindsay, I feel like you're the perfect person to sort of go into this. It's like one thing I always get asked for more and more actually as the AI comes in and tech advances is we want really good, clear communicators. We want people who can sort of, inspire and motivate and just are very able to, I guess, lead and communicate to a very high standard. And listening to you speak the last sort of like hour, you've definitely got those great communication skills. So how can one really, I guess, improve upon their own communication? Do you recommend, I did Toastmasters, for example, and put myself in a bit of a public speaking situation, which absolutely terrified me, but I learned a lot about clear communication, storytelling, all of that through going through that scenario. Yeah, what advice would you have for those people that want to communicate clearer, whether that's via email, whether it's in a boardroom, whether that's speaking on a stage? Yeah. Where can we start?
Understanding what you're looking to achieve specifically by enhancing your communication skills is the key. Without that, you'll just become a forever student, and that will you find it very hard to apply anything which doesn't have a purpose for you in any way, shape, or form. So if it's to, for example, expand your comfort zone when it comes to communication and feel more comfortable inputting in meetings because you feel like you've got plenty of great ideas, but you're not comfortable to put your hand up and share them in a virtual meeting, for example, which is what I hear absolutely a lot. The first place to always go, in my personal opinion, maybe bias, is the L&D team, so learning and development team, or whoever takes after training, because they've always got oodles of things like that that they're just wishing they could share with someone who would ask, and trying to find ways to get people to know these things are available. Always go there first because they will have things which are relevant to your company specifically, which is really useful because again, know your purpose, but also understanding your company culture, which is what their job is. Always go to your L&D team. If you're not loving what they've suggested for some reason, or perhaps it's not quite in alignment with what you had, which can absolutely happen, and they don't have any other suggestions for you, then reflecting back on why you want to do this, and then perhaps popping a post up on LinkedIn looking to improve or looking to enhance, because a lot of people on LinkedIn won't want to admit they're working in that sort of sense. To improve, they'll look to enhance. Looking to enhance my communication skills in this area. What can you suggest for me? You will get so many responses, and people will also find that very impressive that you are open to ask. It's only ever a positive thing. So LinkedIn and just popping a post out will be my second thing. If for some reason you don't have an amazing LinkedIn network and perhaps you don't get any responses, you could go to a few people in your LinkedIn connections that have either similar jobs to you or you look up to in one way, shape or form, and just ask them, you know, what recommendations do you have in a chat? Remembering that maybe 20 to 30% of people that you ask will reply. So if you want 2 to 3 suggestions, ask 10 people. If you want 10 suggestions, ask 20 to 30 people. Then you can always go to YouTube as well. There's so much on YouTube, and none of it is bad advice if you know what you're looking to achieve as well. And then I've completely forgotten the last one, but I'm sure it was gold. And when I remember, I'll let you know.
That's just so good. Such good, again, practical advice, which is just fantastic. And look, I do think communication is something we should all continue to work on, and understanding how people like to communicate as well. And I think that's absolutely key. But I've definitely worked on my communication style over the years. And I guess what the public speaking course gave me was then the ability to speak more on the podcast, to really think about how do I want to structure these questions, and just sort of gave me that level of understanding and awareness of what I was doing. I was often repeating a lot of filler words, and I'll listen back to like this podcast now and I'll go, oh, Georgina, stop saying like and ums. And it just, that's ingrained in me. But I think because I speak and think quite fast, so I'm just in it so much, excited about having these conversations, that it's not a speech. It hasn't got to be perfect. And that's the other piece in it as well that I think is really important to just say. Your communication isn't being a robot and just reading from a script and being pitch perfect. No one can do that. Even the best speakers in the world can't really do that. You're going to have some bumps, you're going to have some gaps, you're going to have some trips, and that's okay. That's also what makes you human as well. So I think that's really important to just say. But the final question, is there anything that we haven't touched upon today that you think it's just worth the listeners taking away from this conversation, whether it's about leadership, communication, anything that you think is worth just noting before we wrap up today?
Something that I really live my life by is leadership is something you can choose to do right now in this moment just by leading yourself. And it all starts with being the person that would inspire you. So whoever that is for you, and if you don't have an answer to that question immediately or you've never thought about it before, take a moment to really think about it. Who would be the person that inspires you, and how can you be that person? Where are you now, and where is that? What's the gap between that? Maybe there's not much of a gap and it's just leaning into, for example, more humor in a day-to-day life, or leaning into someone who portrays more confidence until you can develop those confidence skills. But understanding where you are and where you'd like to be. We often put so much of an emphasis in this world on leaving a legacy, and our actions, we're such an action-based society that we neglect to be long enough with ourselves, and understanding that making ourselves happy is, at the end of the day, all that matters. And if we can show up in a way that would inspire us on a day-to-day basis, then we're living a pretty good life, and it's something that we can go to sleep happy about every single night. So that's what leadership truly is in its essence to me personally.
Oh, love that. Being the leader of your own life, the CEO of your own, home. Absolutely. I just think that's just powerful advice, something that I think about a lot. Lindsay, it's been an absolute pleasure. Where can I send people to find out more about you and everything that you do? Where do you hang out the most?
I hang out on LinkedIn all of the time. There's also lots of resources on my website on leadership development, including communication and all sorts of things. But on LinkedIn is where you'll find me posting on a very regular basis.
Well, I'll make sure that I link all of that below in the show notes. So please go and check Lindsay out and her website. And thank you. Thank you. It's just been such an engaging conversation. I've definitely learned a lot. And we're all work in progresses. I think that's the key thing, right? No one's got it all figured out. And it's got to aim to be just that 1% better every single day. And, you know, we will become the people that we're destined to be. But Lindsay, it's been an absolute pleasure. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Georgie.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.